Hi, this is Joe Mullen. You're listening to Nasty Knuckles.
You're listening to Nasty Knuckles, the Hockey Outlaws podcast, with your host, Derek Nasty Suttermeyer, and former Philadelphia Flyer enforcer, Riley Cote, as they go behind the scenes with your favorite NHL players. Time to face off.
All right, welcome back. What is happening, Nasty?
What's up, Regs? What do you got for me?
Just recovering from Sunday's game, dude. Ha!
Just because you bury one doesn't mean you got to recover all of a sudden. Move this guy back to D.
Back to D, yeah. That's it, man. Go back for pucks.
You know what Shell would tell you?
Off the glass or D to D. Not back to D. It wasn't a whole lot of D to D back to D's hinge plays.
It was
D to D and up.
That's true. It was a fun game against our buddies, the Blue Devils. So nice to get back into the season, a new season. What's going on?
Not much. Just Flyers postponed their game. So,
yep.
Resting, recovering, regenerating, reinventing themselves, whatever they're doing here in the next 48 hours, preparing for Boston on Thursday. But they're so depleted with COVID protocols and injuries. I think this is probably the best thing that could happen to them in this moment is give them a couple of days off here, regroup, postpone the game. Yeah, Carolina's a red hot team, so
we're
facing them depleted, and yeah, they're struggling. You know, lost the last five games, 2 points of their last 10.
Yeah, it's been tough. It's been tough, and it, you know, you don't want, like we always say, you don't want to make excuses, but I mean, they are depleted. Besides the COVID, with the injuries to some, you know, Brassard's back hurt again, and you know, Coots still out, and obviously Ellis, you know, guys played four games, but getting some guys back from COVID, hopefully by Thursday. I think our boy Baller was saying that a couple guys came back off of that COVID list, so that'll definitely help, and hopefully they get the ball rolling.
Yeah, no, that would be nice. This is the time to do it if they're going to decide to do it. You know, 7 points out of that wild card, two tough games coming up, and then I wouldn't say a lighter load going into next week, but those games are all, you know,
yeah, you have
must,
to win.
Must win games.
You have to win them, yeah.
So now is the time if they're going to go on a run. This is it.
Yeah,
can't run. You can't wait much longer.
No,
otherwise it's going to slip away. It's kind of slipped away a couple times, and this is, you know, the last straw here. So unfortunate news too with Sam Moran. I think they announced that he's done for the season. This poor guy. You know, and I want to clarify my position on the start of the year when I, you know, made that tweet and essentially screenshotted Sam's message. I think, you know, I don't think he realized what he was dealing with at the time.
Right.
He talks about scar tissue. It was just, it wasn't a new injury. It was just, you know, regeneration, repair, whatever. Take some time off, let the scar tissue heal. And then now we're hearing that he's essentially done for the season. So obviously hasn't made any progress, whether it's a new injury or that injury is just not recovering. But, all I've got to say is that, you know, I feel terrible for the poor guy.
First of all,
I mean, you got a heart of a lion.
Yes.
If there's any guy that I've coached and been around that wants to be in the NHL, be an NHL player and win, Sam Moran's that guy. It's just so unfortunate that his career has gone this way, you know.
Yeah.
It's just a shame, you know. He got a heart of gold. Hopefully there's something at the end of all this for him.
Yeah.
Wish him the best, however this looks for him. You know, the remainder of the season and going into next season, however that looks. I just want to bring that up.
Because, yeah.
You know, I feel kind of silly when I made that comment, but, you know, my comment wasn't just pulling something out of thin air.
No, he actually
was coming from Sam.
That.
I think maybe in the moment here, you know, speaking for him is he didn't think it was as bad as it was. And he, you know, sent me that comment, and I was just, you know, maybe excited for him to say that.
Yes.
Because, you know, I wanted to, you know, I didn't want to hear that he's out again and having to deal with another injury. So, you know, maybe that's on me. But nonetheless, I apologize for what I threw out there, but I just wanted to throw that out there.
Yeah.
You know, some actual truth here now around what's going on with Sam, and wish him the best. So.
Yeah, for sure. He's just a great guy. I was lucky. I had dinner with him a few weeks ago, and we actually kind of talked about, you know, at the beginning of the year, like, he was so optimistic. He thought he was getting his knee cleaned up. And just like he had texted you, he had said that to me.
100%.
He had said that to me, so it wasn't like you were throwing something out of thin air, like you said. But we do wish you the best, Sammy. Great guy. Flyers would be crazy not to keep that man around I mean, a number amount of things he could do there for them. But anyway, Flyers got to get some wins here. We know that. They know that. I do feel bad with just how depleted they've been.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, you know, a lot of teams are. Maybe not as much as we are here in Philly, but still, hopefully they regroup here and find a way. So
they got to.
Yeah.
They got no other choice. So
I know one thing. Next week, next Monday, fans of Philly in the island.
Oh, yeah.
Going to go. And I can't wait. I'm interested to see that building.
Yeah.
And just to be with the guys from Fans of Philly. Saw Joe the other night. So can't wait for that, man. What a great group. And they're going down to Tampa Bay.
Oh, man.
For the Eagles.
Look out.
And he's got their own parking lot set aside beside the stadium. You want to talk about a shit show, boys, in a good way. That is going to be awesome. I wish them the best. Hopefully the Birds find a way to beat the GOAT. I'll just say it.
Yeah.
TB. TB12.
No kidding.
So maybe they find a way. It'd be awesome.
That would be awesome. And, of course, the trip in March, right?
Yes. I mean, fans Smashville.
Nashville. 500 Philly fans. We'll Can't be rocking. Wait. Looking forward to that.
So yep.
Check out Fans of Philly at fansofphilly.com. And getting ready to rock, episode 57.
Baller City app.
Episode 57, my bad.
That's okay. Hey, I'm the one that's
almost completely lost track of how many episodes are rocking.
You know, that's all right. That's good. I've done it before.
Well, episode 57 is presented by our good friends at Curaleaf, Curaleaf.com, medical marijuana dispensary, 12 locations in Pennsylvania. Awesome staff, knowledgeable staff. I'm sure Sambo could probably use a little cannabis right about now. So check them out, Curaleaf.com, for all your medical marijuana needs. Let's go, Nash.
Let's go.
Welcome back. I'm Riley Cote.
And I'm Derek Settlemyer. And this week, we are so lucky and fortunate and happy to have one of the best human beings I've ever met in my 26 years of hockey, NHL Hall of Famer, three-time Stanley Cup winner, and just an amazing person, Mr. Joey Mullen. Joey, what's up, brother?
Not a whole lot. It's a little dead here on Cape Cod right now. It's you know, winter season, no golf, no outdoors. It's pretty much stay indoors. I get to the hockey rink once in a while, so still put the skates on and play a little bit of hockey.
Yeah, nice.
Best player on the ice too, probably. Sure. Definitely
hanging around the net, scoring goals.
I figured you'd have one of those golf simulators in the house. You know, being in Cape Cod when it's cold, obviously you can't play. But I figured at least you'd have that.
Yeah, probably should.
He's got the old putting green out back there.
I might go out and buy one today.
There you go.
Good idea.
They're fun, man. We did that a little bit last year. We had a buddy that was letting us in his place. He had opened it up, and COVID hit. And he was just letting a couple of us go in there. It is fun. I mean, obviously it's not the same as golf, but it's, you know, you kind of hit the ball, work on your swing a little bit, I guess, which did not help my game. And it would not help his either, Joe. I can tell you that for free. I'll tell you that.
But Joe, I don't know about you.
This guy's a golfer.
You're sandbagging me already, right?
Oh, man. So, We could keep you on here for 3 hours, Joey, but start with you right now you're just kind of hanging out, waiting for the winter to be over, I guess.
Yeah, kind of, you know, but I'm enjoying, you know, like I said, playing hockey. I play a couple times a week and, you know, whenever I can. You know, I'll go up to Boston once in a while, play with the Bruins alumni.
Oh, nice.
Play with some college buddies on Thursdays, you know. And then I found a group down here on Cape Cod. These guys want to play three times a week.
Oh, so wow. That's awesome. So five times a week for you?
Well, no. I gotta curb it a little bit so I don't get overtired.
Yeah,
you know?
Right.
So
pace yourself.
I just kind of try to play maybe sometimes three, but I don't do more than three.
Gotcha.
That's awesome. Still got the love for the game. Why the hell not get out there and have some fun, right?
You know what? It gives you something to kind of look forward to. Get out there, play a little hockey, have some fun with the guys, come home. Yep. And the best thing is, one of the rinks is right down the street. It's about a mile away.
Oh,
so
that's great.
That is good. Yeah.
That's a great setup. Yeah. I hear you on that. Nasty and I play in a men's league game together. We only play once a week, and I look forward to that. You know, I get out there. And, you know, I'm a skill guy now, Joey, so you know, working on the mats, scoring goals, you know, all that good stuff.
That's true.
I played with Nasty in a league.
Listen, the best is we were playing, and we talked Joey into joining us, and it was so funny. So the first period, I got to play with Joe. And it's so easy to play when someone's that damn good. And but the funny thing is, after the first period, the guys were like, "Hey, can we play with Joe too?" Oh, so yeah, we switched because every guy on the team wanted to play with Joe. They were just so excited that you played with us. It was awesome. It was so much fun. And they still talk about that. Still, Bauer Brew, TimmyParr.com, that team.
Yeah,
the Bauer Brew. They still talk about when you played with us, and they just thought it was the greatest thing ever. So
it was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Got some good dishes from Derek.
Well,
he's got patience, doesn't he?
Yeah. <right.
laughs> Slows the game down.
Yeah, I have to slow it down because I'm so slow.
Just like his basketball game.
Yeah, right.
Oh,
yeah.
I wish I had a hand. Oh, boy.
Shoulder.
That would be fun.
Shoulder fake.
A little shimmy.
Fake,
yeah, okay. Oh,
saw
man.
That the other day.
Yeah.
Looking good.
Yeah, right.
Well, Joey, I mean, you have a quite an incredible story and you know, an amazing hockey career. I don't even know exactly where to start, you know, with that, talking to you about your career. But I mean, maybe it makes sense to start where it's all started. And you have a pretty interesting, you know, upbringing in New York and how you got introduced to hockey with your father being, you know, part of the ice maintenance crew and whatnot. Why don't you talk a little bit about how you got introduced to hockey and your connection to it, having grown up in New York?
Well, to begin with, you know, I had a pretty good-sized family. My two older brothers played roller hockey. My dad played roller hockey. My uncles played roller hockey. So I can remember way back when I was just a little kid just going over to watch my dad play. And then, you know, and then eventually when I got about five or six, I wanted to play, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I'd go across the street to the rink. It was actually directly across the street from the apartment building where I live. And just cross the street and go into the schoolyard and play hockey all day long, you know. And my brothers were always over there playing, and I learned from them. And, you know, just, you know, with Dad working at Madison Square Garden and bringing home some broken sticks once in a while, some good ones too.
Yeah.
you know, it was always, you know, we'd wait up for him to come home from work all the time, especially after a hockey game, and see if he had any sticks for us, you know. So, you know, it was just great. And that's how we pretty much got started at the roller hockey. And, you know, I just kind of followed my brothers into it and just loved playing. I started out as a goalie, though.
Oh, you did?
Did you?
Wow.
I never knew that. Oh, my God.
Mistake.
Oh, my God. I didn't know that.
When you were so small and skinny, you know, you're like, you know.
I had no idea.
I always played with most of the time I play with older kids because I always wanted to play with my brothers and his friends and stuff.
Yeah.
So.
That is so
but,
cool.
But I smartened up quickly.
Yeah.
Got the hell out of the pipes.
Got out of it.
Yeah. Well, your little buddy here, Elvis, is he's not quite as smart because he's playing goalie. So
I see that. Yeah.
We'll see what happens with that, but he does enjoy it. But you know, I've tried to crank a couple off his head to maybe change his mind, but I don't think as hard as his head is.
Likes it.
I think he likes it.
He's
so.
Been doing it for a couple of years now, right?
Yeah. Well, he kind of. He really got into it this season. He would fill in, but he was he was all over the place, but now he's dialed into it. He really likes it. But
full time now.
I had no idea. As many times as long as I've known you, I did not know that you actually started playing goalie. That's hilarious.
Yeah.
What's that?
Is he in the Jeff Reese goalie school?
Reeser? No,
Reggie Lemelin goalie school.
Right. Him or Reggie. I tell you what, Reeser, you know, we always used to joke around with Reeser. He's like, at the beginning of the year, I'm going to be calm, boys. Nothing's going to bother me. First game, first period, he comes head down. He's losing his marbles. And we would always kid around, like, tough goal go in or something. We'd be, like, looking up in the rafters to make sure Reeser wasn't coming down because he was so pissed off. Yeah, but he has not. He has not been in touch with Reeser about goalie school, that's for sure.
Yeah.
That's hilarious. Yeah. Hey, Joey, so when you say roller hockey, like, are you talking, like, traditional roller hockey of, like, four wheels in a row, or is this roller skating back then?
It was roller skating.
It was like the 1-2,
two in
one,
the front, two in the back, the quads.
Wow, that is
regular
so cool.
Roller
that
skates.
Is old school. That's like the OG of hockey, right? Yeah,
kind of like the roller derby skates.
So you guys were playing when you would go play at the park there, was it a special rink or was it like just asphalt?
You know what? It was just a schoolyard. There was a public high school across the street called the New York School of Printing. And they had a big schoolyard, a couple of basketball hoops on, you know, in there. And we kind of take it over right after school because all the kids would like travel to school. To go to that school because, you know, so they would leave and we would come in right after school with our sticks. Sometimes some of the kids wanted to play basketball, but when they see the sticks flying,
let's get out of here.
So, but it wasn't, was it a smooth, like cement? Like the reason I asked, I just wondered how your wheels, like how often would you have to like change wheels if you're playing on like asphalt road, you know, or something like that.
Actually, when we first started, we had the steel wheels.
Oh, okay.
So they would last probably at least a year.
Oh, okay.
But you know, you always had your skates for a couple of years before you threw them out, you know? And, so, you know, you'd have to change them maybe every year and a half or so. And then we started using more like the roller derby wheels that were kind of wooden or, you know, some kind of
hard
material
rubber.
That did. Yeah. So they were faster. They would glide more than the steel wheels and stuff. So so. That's how we evolved those skates. And then I never really played on the rollerblades until just a few years ago, probably, you know.
Yeah.
You know, because they always have a roller hockey reunion still for the neighborhood.
Oh, they do, right?
Oh, that's awesome.
It's usually in October, you know, mid to late October. And we usually get a pretty good crowd. You know, people just come back to see each other from the neighborhood and stuff. Most of them have moved out, but they hear about it over the internet or whatever, you know, emails and stuff. And we get a pretty good crowd for it. And, you know, we actually had the cup there once. So,
oh, wow.
And the NHL sent some cameras and stuff. And,
oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, that was good.
So you're playing roller hockey. When did the transition go? When did you decide you wanted to go to the ice?
We never even thought about going to ice because that's all we had was the roller hockey pretty much. And then right around when I was 10, I think that made Kenny about 15, my oldest brother. And he got into it because – the Rangers, Emil Francis, decided that, you know, he's seen all these roller hockey kids flying past Madison Square Garden because that Madison Square Garden was right up the street, not the one that's there now, the one before it.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so he came out one day, he's seen all these roller hockey kids going down the street. So he followed them and he started watching. He says, wow. He goes, why can't we get all these kids on ice? You know?
And he had two kids of his own, two boys that were playing ice hockey already out in Long Island. And so, you know, he got some people together and they formed the junior league. And my brothers went, like I said, went into it. And then, you know, they wanted to develop, you know, younger kids too. So that's how I got into it. So I didn't start ice skating until I was about 10.
Wow.
That's amazing. God,
that's incredible.
That is incredible. Was it a tough transition for you, like skating on the blades, or did you pick it up fairly quickly?
Yeah, pretty quick. You know, the first probably half dozen times, you know,
yeah,
you just trying to get the hang of it. And then once you do, yeah, it came quick. But I was still probably awkward because when you roller skate, it's more like running.
Yeah, it's straight on. Yeah.
And then, you know, when you ice skate, it's, you know, it's a smooth stride outwards, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I didn't get that until after college.
You had the Mets, you know, going.
Actually, in college, the coach, one of the first things he did was tell me to follow one of the best skaters on the team around. And, just watch, you know, the way his stride was and try to copy it, you know?
Oh, okay.
So that's when I started working on my stride.
Yeah. It's a good thing you've been working on your hands for 5 years before you got on the ice, that you can compensate,
well,
the skating with the hands.
Well, that's what the roller hockey
was for. Yeah, exactly. Right? Work on the mitts.
You can work on your hands all day long with roller hockey.
Yeah. It seems to be pretty common. We've had Pat Maroon on here before. We've talked to a couple other guys.
Bobby Ryan,
you know, have a history of roller hockey. And it's kind of the same thing in different eras of, like, you know, the guys that played roller hockey have that really good hands. But the knock has always been, like, they're skating just for obvious reasons. But when you can make plays and score goals like the way you did and other guys have, you can kind of turn a blind eye to the skating. You know, it doesn't seem so bad when you're scoring that much.
right. But you still got to get there.
Yeah.
Skating's very important for that.
Yeah, especially now in today's game, for sure.
Yeah, for sure.
But even back then, you had to get there, no question. But
right.
Interesting. To turn of events and how you got introduced to ice hockey and your brothers and your father and the whole bit. It's really amazing. And then, like, you know, for you to not be drafted, which I actually just learned that today. I just assumed you were drafted with, you know, that type of career. What do you think the reason was that you didn't get drafted? Was it just being like an American born player from, you know, from where you grew up? Do you think it has something to do with it, or what was it?
That, you know, they weren't taking a lot of Americans out of college at that time. There was a few before me, but not a lot, you know. And, you know, I think the 80 Olympic team turned that around. Well, on the draft, I think it was more or less, you know, the era that I was in, where there wasn't a lot of Americans in the league until – you know, after the 80 Olympic team started to win, you know, and, you know, when I was in college, all I heard was, he's too small, you know?
Oh yeah.
And then, you know, by the, end of college, you know, with the numbers that you put up and everything, I got an opportunity as a free agent. So, that's eventually how I got into the league.
you remember the movie? I was telling Riles, I didn't know if he'd remember, but in the movie Miracle, you know, one of the guys says, "Hey, why isn't Joey Mullen here?" And he's like, "I can give you 30,000 reasons why he's not here." This guy's counting his dollar bills, as Litz would say. But it is still amazing. I mean, I guess that's just the way the thinking was, you know, back then. Like you said, you know, I mean, you did come in and you're playing in the NHL when it's a man's league. We've talked about this a lot, and you're not a huge guy. You're obviously an unbelievable player, first U.S. born player to score 500 goals in a league. I mean, what an amazing stat and an accomplishment. But you proved them wrong, that's for sure, and you did it quickly. So it's just amazing though. Still,
yeah. But 212 points in 4 years of college is significant. And it doesn't matter how small you are. It just seems like so odd that you have that much production. And I mean, from what I read too, that your first year, you had a partial scholarship, right? You were actually paying out of your own pocket, and you.
Yeah, but it was like the school was paid for. It was, you know, your books.
Okay.
The books were like $700 and stuff, and they just said, you know, we just don't have money to give you for books. So it was no big deal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know,
but yeah, obviously the production, your production changed their attitude a little bit. Where I think you landed up getting the whatever you quote unquote full ride, right? But the numbers are there.
After the first year, everything was paid for.
After you scored 34 points.
Yeah, right.
Yeah,
I think we'll take care of your books there, kid. Don't worry about it.
So how did that go down? 1980 Olympics, you get the call. What was the timeline of your conversations with St. Louis and the Olympics? Obviously, you'd signed before, you turned it down, right?
Not so much signed. I mean, my agent had talked to St. Louis, but you know, I never really signed until afterwards.
Okay. But that's pretty pretty wild, you know.
Right after I made my decision, you know, not to go to the Olympics. And my decision was based on my dad. He had just gotten sick. He had a stroke. So, I figured, you know, if we need money, you know, for the family, you know, it'd be better to turn pro at that time.
Yeah.
So, in case the family needed some money, you know, and that was the basis for that decision. And for me, it was the right decision. I don't look back on it, you know, for any other reason. And, you know, I'm glad I made that decision. It worked out well for both them and me.
Yeah, so, yeah, for sure it did.
Yeah, right? Yeah, exactly.
Sure did.
Yeah, sure. It definitely worked out for both. Yeah, you know, interesting, you know, how you take your success from college, and then I think you played 2 years in the Central Hockey League at the time, and you put up incredible numbers there as well. So I mean, you were
benched that first year too for about 3 weeks.
Did
two
you
or
really?
3 weeks.
Come on.
Yeah, he said, "Hey, I got to sit you down," you know. The coach called me in, Jack Evans, and he said, you know, we're going to sit you out for a while. And, you know, he thought I was homesick and stuff like that. So right around Christmas, I started playing again because somebody got hurt. And I got the chance to play with Rick Bonus and Floyd Thompson, two veteran guys. And, you know, I took off that year and with those guys, and it was so much fun playing with them guys, you know. Every time somebody wanted to fight me, I turn around and they were gone. Yeah, they were already down.
Yeah, that's awesome.
You know, I wound up winning Rookie of the Year that year, and then the following year I won MVP. We won the cup there both times.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
Yeah, the first 2 years.
Wow. So, okay.
Yeah.
And then
I actually started off the third year in Salt Lake City too.
Yeah, and then you got the call.
Yeah.
To the big boys. Yeah. And you didn't disappoint there either. 59 points in 45 games is it's amazing. But you're too small, Joey. You're too small. And like I said, man, I don't want to beat a dead horse, but man, when you played, man, it was a man's game, dude. It's crazy, like how much more physical and what you got away with. I mean, I guess
the hooking, grabbing, the cross checking
in front. It's amazing, like when Riles was going to bring up in a little bit about like the two pass games, you know, after practice, like. just the way you still skate and move with the amount of years you played in National Hockey League when it was not an easy game to play, and the points you put up at the same time is amazing. It really is. But you're in St. Louis, what, 5 years? You played there basically five?
About four and a half.
Four and a half, yep.
About four and a half, and then I got traded in February to Calgary of 86.
That's a big trade, too, wasn't it?
Pretty big trade.
Yeah, it's 3 for 3. Me, Terry Johnson, and Rick Wilson for Gino Cavallini, Eddie Beers, and Charlie Bourgeois.
Wow.
All right.
Okay. And that ended up working out well. In Calgary?
Oh, worked out really well. Yeah. You know, I hated it. You know, I enjoyed St. Louis, had a great time, made some really good friends there, loved it there. But, you know, shocked and sad that I had to leave, but, you know, wound up being probably the best move of my career, you know, going to Calgary. And we had a really good team up there, you know.
Yeah, you did. So. Winning it. It was your first Stanley Cup win, and I remember being a kid watching it. It was so awesome. Like, yeah. I didn't know you, but
the first year in '86, we went to the Stanley Cup final and lost.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's right.
To Montreal.
Yeah,
and you know, went back in '89 and won. You know,
that was awesome. What was your initial feeling? You said you're obviously disappointed, a little bit bittersweet, moving out of St. Louis, but going to a Canadian market. Yeah, how were the fans and how was the experience when you first got there? Must have been crazy.
I was scared to death. You know, living in Canada, way out west. You know, I had to leave my wife was pregnant with third boy Patrick.
Yeah,
and you know, I had to leave them in St. Louis, and she wound up just going to Boston, taking the kids and going to Boston because she had doctors there too, and her parents were there, so. You know, so she went to Boston and I went to Calgary and finished out the season there. And you know, we went all the way to the finals.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah.
A long run.
Yeah, the thing was we were playing St. Louis. I think it was the first round of the playoffs. And we were in St. Louis the day she had Patrick.
Oh, no way.
Yeah, and I said if – we were in St. Louis that day playing. So if you know, if she would have stood in St. Louis, she would have, you know, I would have been at the birth of Patrick.
Oh.
Since he went to Boston, I missed it. But yeah, kind of funny.
Yeah, yeah, I know, right? What are the chances of that?
Oh man.
But yeah, they were good days though.
Yeah, the year you guys won in '89, I believe, right? Your first win and your season that year. I mean, you potted 51, 110 points. Not a bad season. I mean, you know, not really a big deal. But then looking at that lineup, man, yeah, it's pretty good damn team too, man. Must have been just so much fun. I remember a while back when we were working together, and I think you guys had a reunion, and you had sent me some pictures. I think it was a reunion, man. It was so cool. See Lanny McDonald, just all those guys, and yeah. I was like, it must be so much fun, man.
It was a great bunch of guys, great place to play, Calgary.
Yeah.
You know, just getting there for the first time, you know, I'm walking through the airport. And, you know, walking by people that are just, you know, going somewhere and, you know, just traveling. And it's like, hi, Joey. Yeah. Hi, Joey.
Yeah. Everyone knows you.
Yeah. Good to have you here. And I'm like, how do these people know me? I have nothing on that says, you know, hockey player. And I'll just walk it through just like them. And
awesome.
But that, you know, that's how you know, it was up there. You were like an instant celebrity almost, you know?
Yeah, true. Yeah, that Canadian hockey, right?
Yeah.
They love it.
Yeah.
You can't hide. Nowhere to hide
the
there.
I could walk through the mall in St. Louis and nobody would know.
Yeah, that's the truth.
Oh, man. That's great.
So then you move on to Pittsburgh and you have obviously more success there. I mean, you keep scoring goals, two more cups. I mean, the success just kept coming. I mean, obviously now, you go to a team with great players.
I was lucky enough to have Bob Johnson in both Calgary and Pittsburgh, you know, okay. And I think he was a big part of both those two teams winning, you know. You know, he was there before, you know, before I got there in Calgary, and, you know, he taught those guys, and, you know, he coached us to that 86 final. But, you know, everything he taught us, we just kept all the way through to the 89 team, you know,
yep.
all his teachings and stuff. And then in Calgary's in Pittsburgh, same thing. You know, he was there when I got there, so I knew him. I knew Craig Patrick because we played on in '79. We went to the World Championships, and okay. He was on the team. So I knew Craig. So it was just, and then you know, another team that was so stacked with talent,
yeah,
Pittsburgh, you know, and then the trades we made that first year, getting Ulf Samuelson and Ronnie Francis,
right,
yeah,
and you know, just amazing, you know, to be around that talent. You had Mario, Brian Trotche already there,
jeez,
Paul Coffey, Recky,
yeah,
Kevin Stevens, Johnny Cullen. So Donnie was in the Ronnie Francis trade, but
okay,
and then you know, I mean, even the role players, you know, Troy Loney, Bob Urey, Phil Bork, Peter Taglinetti, you know,
yeah.
Actually, we got Peter. Actually, got Peter, Larry Murphy at the end of that season too, in trades.
Wow,
so,
some nice additions.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, that's quite the squad. Quite the squad there. When did Yogs come in the mix?
Yogs was there. That was his first year.
Oh, that was his first year. Okay.
Year in Pittsburgh was his first year in 1999. Oh,
wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Was he like
good addition?
Yeah, not bad. Not I bad mean, with like I'm assuming when he was coming over or however that worked. Like, there was obviously talk about him, but were you, like, instantly impressed with his size, obviously, and then just the skill?
Oh, yeah. I mean, just the way he handled some of the bigger people on the other teams. Like, they're trying to run him and knock him over, and he'd just stick out his butt.
Yeah, yeah.
That big butt.
He's still doing it, Joey. He's still doing it.
I know.
Yeah,
but he's still in great shape too.
Yeah, he is. He is.
Yeah.
Oh,
you know,
man.
And then you know once he kind of felt like he was getting pushed around a little bit, you know, he from the waist down he was built solid, like he was so strong, and he was pretty normal, you know, when he first came.
Yeah.
But he was young too. He was 18, and then he built himself up on top, and man. You seen him? He's ripped.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And he's still ripped.
Yeah, and I remember when we were talking about it a couple weeks ago, and he—I forget who we were talking to—but we're saying like he used to walk through the room when you were coaching with the Flyers, and I was with you, and he would be flexing and being like 40 years old, boys. And he looked better than anyone else on the team, you know. Guys, like, God, but he wouldn't leave the rink. He was a guy when he joined us with the Flyers, like, you know, Joey, like he would leave after practice, but then he would come back all night and be there doing shooting his damn golf cart tire off the wall. We'd have to get it painted once a week because there were black marks all over the wall. But he certainly did work hard, and what a career, man. And think if he didn't take the five, whatever, 4 years off from the NHL, what his numbers probably would have been, because he was pretty elite when he left. I mean, he came back and did well with us, too, the first year he came back. Used to drive you a little bit crazy, though, as a power play guy. Joey's, like, never in a bad mood, it seems, but Yogs would get him going once in a while. And it was kind of funny to see Joey, like, pissed off, basically, you know, like, Yoxie's, God dang it, he's not listening to me.
I'm telling him stuff, and he's, yeah, yeah, yeah. And then as soon as I leave the room, he's over there telling the guys that just the opposite, you know. And it was all the young kids he was telling.
Yeah, exactly. And then the best is he would come off the ice, and Chief would be on the bench and be like, "Hey, Yox, way to kill it off for him, bud. Just hold it over there. Just massage it on the wall. Just kill it off. Good job." And then Yox would look
back. Doesn't sound like Chief.
Yeah, right. And he would look back at Chief and be like, "Did you play on the power play, Chief?" And he goes, "Nope." He goes, "Oh, okay, just checking." And then they'd start laughing. But oh man, but he's a special player, that's for sure. And you saw it when he first came in. So, but man, you played with an unbelievable. I mean, the players, just looking at your teams you played on, it's amazing.
Yeah, and they, I mean, no. Once we traded Coffey after the first cup in Pittsburgh, we got Tockett, Shel Samuelson, and Kenny Reagan
right.
from the Flyers.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Yeah, and I think you guys get Recce then in that trade.
He was – so they must have, because I remember my first year with Florida. It was my first year out of college. I was with the Panthers, and you guys were coming off your second cup. And I just remember our first home game was against the Penguins, and Florida Panther had ice girls. And it's – I don't know if this had started anywhere else, but they had them. And whoever did their dressing room – put it straight across from the visiting room. And I just remember thinking, like, I knew Tockett from being a kid, and he played here with Flyers, and so I knew him fairly well, and I didn't really know anyone else, and it was my first year. But I just remember thinking, these guys are rock stars, man. They pulled out chairs and were sitting in the hallway talking to all the ice girls.
Oh, of course
and
they did.
Finally, I can't remember who it was, but someone came out, one of your coaches came out and go, "Hey, boys, like, bring it in. Like, we can't sit out here." It was so funny.
Was either Bob Johnson or, it could have been like Rick Keogh or the assistant.
I just remember, like, I probably had things I needed to be doing, but I was standing there just watching and listening, and I just thought, this is great. And Tox looking over at me, this is great. You know, back-to-back Stanley Cup champs, you kind of do what you want, I guess. Yeah,
exactly. Get a little more wiggle room.
I thought it was pretty funny, though.
Yeah. So, Joey, I want to talk to you a little bit about our two-pass games back in the day. You know, we spent a lot of time together. I probably led the NHL in games scratched. The amount of warm-ups I took in games scratched, and probably amount of two-pass games we landed up playing. But I was able to witness some of that that righteous hockey scoring that you had, in your previous career. Seen that firsthand, two-on-two. Well. Reggie
Lemelin.
Just
trying to keep you sharp for the games there. Ryle.
You did, so man. I always tell people that the two-pass games were the most fun part of my game.
A little pressure on you, yeah.
Exactly, the best part of hockey.
Meanwhile, I just want to go to lunch, and I got to try to get you guys off the ice, and I feel bad. Yeah. You know, like, Jay would have stayed out there until 2 o'clock.
No, you did. You didn't feel bad.
I was hungry, man. Maybe hungover. I don't know. I needed a nap and something to eat, man. No, but it was great, though. It was fun, actually, watching you guys do that stuff, though. Like, Joey, just, you're so competitive, man. It was awesome. It was awesome. I know you enjoyed it. Well, that was
but I wanted them to enjoy it, too.
Yeah,
so
I think they did.
If I'm not trying and they're just going to skate around me, what fun is that?
Wow. Yeah. That's the thing. I think you won most of the games, Joey. Your team seemed to win them all.
And you wanted them. You wanted those guys, to work hard and have fun. And,
right.
And I thought that was always a perfect way of, getting you guys to work hard. Just to make sure you're going full speed and trying to make the plays and, not goofing off all, not all the time, but we always goof off. But keep you in like some kind of game shape. Where we could push you around, you aren't allowed to push me around.
Yeah, of course not.
Yeah, we could push you guys around and just try to, you know, make it hard on you. So
yeah, there was it was a lot of fun, a lot of strategy too, right? I mean, you got the combination of the work, you're putting in the work, you know, game situations. You know,
and those games were just like a regular game. It's a give and go game.
Give and go, you know? Game, yeah. Yeah.
You always get those Europeans like
Dennis Telpeco. Dennis Telpeco.
Exactly who I was thinking of. You know, once they go through you three or four times, you know, before he wants to pass the puck, you know.
Never works.
So, you know, no. Reggie had his stick out there.
Yeah, exactly, right. Okay.
Johnny Stevens used to always say give and go because of basketball, you know, but obviously it's in hockey as well. But he would, like, once in a while he'd be giving a speech with the Phantoms or something, talking to the guys, he'd be like, what's one of the best things you can do, NASA? And be like, give and go. Yeah. You know, the guys would laugh. But it's true, man. It's true. It's so true. But and Joey, speaking of like, you know, you coaching here with the Flyers, you had the power play on point for the whole time you were here. Like, nothing against anyone else, but you probably should still be here, in my opinion. But just, I mean, not because you're my buddy and you're such a great guy, but because you produced. I mean, you know, you got to give some credit to the players, which you always did. But whether you want to hear it or not, man, you were the main reason, and you just found a way when things weren't going well. You made changes. I mean, I guess that comes from just being, having a nose for the net like you did. I don't know. I mean, I guess just what you learned over your career.
Yeah, well, you know, being taught by Bob Johnson mostly, you know, especially power play stuff, you know, maybe one of the reasons I probably did get into coaching, you know. And, you know, it was just, we had a great bunch of guys too, guys that wanted to learn and listen. And, you know, we had a lot of success right away. So it made it a lot easier once you have success right away and people are willing to, oh yeah, this is good. You know, let's keep doing stuff like this, you know? And I think it was a lot of gaining a lot of respect and trust to each other, you know?
Right.
And, you know, those were the things that you need for a coach and the guys to have. So,
Well, the boys love you.
Thank you for the kind words. I don't know if we were good all the time, but I think for the most part, it we were up there most of the time in the top 10. Anyway.
Oh yeah, for sure you were. We saw that. And I know that the guys, like you said, they first of all respect you, but You just were a really good communicator. We talk about communication a lot, and you seemed to have a great way with the players, and they trusted you, they loved you. So you were amazing at that. So as well as playing.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, you know, you just keep it going.
Do you watch many games, Joey?
Yeah, I try to.
Yeah.
You know, there's only certain teams I like to watch. Flyers I do because I still know a lot of the kids.
Yeah, right.
Which is good. Pittsburgh's another team I like to watch. Their talent is good.
They're hot. Yeah. They're hot right now too.
Edmonton.
Yeah.
You know, with their talent, Toronto with their talent, always fun to watch. But you know, Calgary, Boston.
Yeah,
I mean, it seems I pretty much played for.
Yeah,
I kind of follow all the time. St. Louis is another one I like to follow. Shen is there. So.
Yeah,
yeah, right.
I like to see what he's doing.
Your buddy Chief there. He's done an unbelievable job, man.
He has. I was so happy for him.
Yeah, you know? Me too.
He did a great job. He deserves it.
He is so funny. I talked to him quite a bit, and he'll tell me some things like what he said to some players, and you could just hear him say, like, you could just see him doing it. And if you told normal people that don't really know him, oh, there's no way he said that. I'm like, oh no, he said it. He tells them what he thinks.
Yeah. He's still calling everybody a pigeon?
Oh, yeah, pigeon. It's like, he told me the other day he called one of the guys in. I won't say who it is because I don't want to piss anyone off. I don't think it would, but he told one of the players, hey, get your line in here. I want to talk to you. And the guy says, I'm not coming in there. He goes, then take your gear off. And the guy goes, are you serious? He goes, dead serious. He says, he goes, by the time he got in his room, he's like, the three of them were in there, and they're like, you're right, we're wrong. You're right, we're wrong.
Come on.
And he goes, no, let's talk about it, though. Yeah. Let's, you know, like, and then, yeah. And they respect him, and they're like, no, you're right, you know, but it's, you know, he has that respect from the players, but he's a fair coach.
Right.
You know,
he is fair.
So
exactly.
Yeah, for sure. Hey, Joey, I was going to go back to the power play thing. I did want to ask you about Claude Giroux, because you obviously had a chance to coach him for years, and you're saying you're still watching games, and geez, keeps you know, challenging different records and beating them, and keeps, you know, keeping people honest with their, you know, assessment of him and all that good stuff. Can you talk about G, what you've seen coaching him, just, you know, 5-on-5 play, mainly power play, and how special of a player he really is, even still in this moment?
Yeah, right from the start when G came to us, I mean, you could see that he had such talent, and he carried us for a long, long time, and he's been an amazing player. Great passer, sees the ice, but he can shoot too, and yeah. He can score. He's got a nose for the net. And now, when I was coaching him on a power play, that's one thing I wanted to always let him know. Gee, you don't always have to pass.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep.
And then he started, you know, practicing his one-timers.
Yep.
Man,
he's got probably the best on the team right now. Oh, yeah. I mean, he really has a bomb of a one-timer.
Yeah. You know? So, but, great players do that. They, you know, they adapt, and they, you know, they work on their games, and they do those little things. G always had me passing pucks in his skates.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember that.
And, you know, he picked those up. He was the best in the league at that, you know, just picking pucks off his skates and, you know, just putting it where he wanted it, you know, so that he could do something like right away. Yeah. With it. And, he was always very approachable to come to and talk to. Never backed away or shied away to, you know, just talking about things. And he was smart. He was a smart player. So he'd always put some, you know, his own influence into all the conversations and tell you what he thinks too. And, you know, always came up with good ideas and, you know, good plays and stuff. But he was always willing to listen, always willing to learn, and you know, try to help out if he could.
Yeah, he's still, for some reason, Joe, he gets mostly love, I would say, but there's still people around here that just don't understand how special of a player he is, and we say it all the time, but you know, you see things, and it's just sometimes people trying to get a rise out of other people on social media. They got to get rid of this. He's not a winner. You have no idea how many little things this guy does for the hockey team. And just how, I mean, he just passed Billy Barber, for God's sakes. Yeah. Second all-time scorer in Flyers history. But, you know, still, for some reason, some people just don't want to give him the credit, I guess. And it's like you said, the little things like picking a puck up, like, a terrible pass in your skates, he makes it look easy so people don't understand what he just did.
Yeah.
And when he used to practice, him and Jake together, practicing, nobody could stop them because they worked. They worked hard all the time.
Right.
You know, they competed, especially in the drills, you know.
Yeah.
And that's what you want in a captain.
Yeah.
You know? You want to see a captain working hard and showing the other players, hey, we're here to learn, to get better, improve, and you know, win. So we're not going to do that standing there goofing off or fooling around during practice, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
I agree. Would you say that, and this is my opinion, I just wanted to get your sense of it, like, you know, like, you look at the teams that have won Stanley Cups in just in the last 10 years, like, it was it's been teams like, you know, Chicago Blackhawks, like two superstars, you know, Pittsburgh Penguins, that core group. Like, G, I don't feel like G ever had that, like, supporting, like, the Batman and Robin type of, you know, help, I guess, if you will. You know, it's kind of been like G is standing on his own. Not that there hasn't been a supporting cast of help along the way, but you never really built a team around two superstars, I guess, like some of these other franchises had. Would you agree with that? Or?
I think early in his career, like when we went to the finals there.
Yep.
Yeah.
In 2010, you know, we had that type of team where we had two, three lines going.
Yep.
You know.
Yeah.
And to help out, you know, the scoring, and he was a big part of that. And you had Richie and Carter and. Hartnell. I could say Hartsy and Cartsy.
Yeah. Yeah. We were waiting on that. you're right, Joe.
We had that secondary scoring back then.
Yeah.
Didn't really have it throughout G's career, I would say, all the time, though.
Yeah.
You know? And you need that. You need somebody to take a little pressure off of a guy like that once in a while, you know?
Yeah, and you're right, Joey. You know, you're thinking back to 2010 there, I mean, Hartnell, Danny B, and Vile couldn't be stopped. I mean, they were unbelievable. And then you're coming back with Richie, you know, and Gags, and you had Carter, and then G was your third-line center, basically, you know, playing with Ash, right?
Yep.
I mean,
yeah.
And producing. He produced, but like you said, it's because there was a depth there in the scoring.
Right.
Yeah. Right.
And every team needs that. Yeah, I mean, right. If you're going to be a Stanley Cup winner, you're not going in there with, you know, just two guys or one, right. You know, one line, you know.
That's right.
You're going to have three lines going that are solid players.
Yeah.
And nowadays, most teams are, you know, getting that fourth line, though.
Yeah, exactly.
They're kicked in a lot, you know.
Yep.
That's true.
The fourth line just keeps getting better and better on every team now.
It does. I still say one of my favorite fourth lines is Clutterbuck, Cizikas, and Martin.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, they're an effective group of players, man. I mean, of course, they play the body.
Too.
And that's what I mean. You know, they gave the Flyers fits and ended up winning in seven a couple in the bubble there. You know, Flyers fought back really hard and they had a good team and, you know, were right there to win game seven, but it didn't happen. But anyway, that fourth line was pretty big in that series.
Right. You know, and Clutterbuck and those guys have been together for like a good 4 or 5 years now. So, yep. I mean, they've been solid for that whole time.
Right. Exactly.
Joey, I was going to ask you, you know, since we're talking about the Flyers days and all that good stuff, maybe a Jack McElhargy story or two. Bucky, we were talking about Bucky before. We got to bring him up. And
yeah, I got
rest. Joey's got something. He's got something because he was a good man.
Just a great guy. I'm sure you tell it all the time. Just a little tired.
Wasn't it you, though, Joey, that morning? I think you had already told me you came into the rink, and it was only a couple guys skating because I think it was an afternoon game, and it was I'm pretty sure it was preseason. And you said, oh, we had to go get Bucky out of his room. And you said he came down to the breakfast table and you said, holy fuck, Bucky, did you get in a fight with your pillow? His white hair was just all over it. And then
that night we were down in the hotel lobby.
Yeah.
You know, having some drinks. And there was a group of people he was sitting there talking to. They were from Cape Cod. Actually, they're from the town in Cape Cod that I live in.
Oh, no way.
And and he was having the grand old time just talking to these people and the family, you know.
Yeah.
And he goes, you're the type of people I want to party again with.
Yeah, that's right. And you could hear him throughout the whole place. Did you hear that? God, I got. Oh, man. He was the greatest, man. Scott Hartnell was on the show, and we were talking about Bucky. And he said one of his favorite things was, like, you know, getting out there and practice. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Who wants it? And he's like, I'm like a tailor because I thread the needle with his passing. But he was a beauty. And that day, like you said, you guys had to pull him out of bed. And you came and told me the story down in the room. And then Bucky comes down a few minutes later. And I said, he goes, I went, Buck Diddy. And he's like, ooh, Buck Diddy's hurt. And I said, oh, a little hungover. He goes, no, just a little tired.
Yeah. That was classic.
He was the greatest, man. It was cool getting to see him. Obviously, he was scouting last few years before, you know, he passed on us. But it was great seeing him every year in Van. He'd come to the rink. And, man, it was just picked up right, you know, where we left off, and just a great guy, man.
He was a great guy to be around.
He was.
He just, you know, he you could see why he was popular with his teammates all the time.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, just a real good guy, I thought, too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, he kept it loose and fun. I mean, you brought up Hartsey. Yeah. I could think of Hartsey, you know, before practice would start, we're all skating around. And Hartsey would hum, you know, half clappers from the other side of the ice. And rip him at Bucky's tux. His whole speed wobble. Be like, wow.
Bucky used to stand in the corner and he'd be ducking all
My Joey, I don't know if you probably heard it, but real quick, he my dad was telling me, you know, when he was a trainer for Bucky back in the day, they had a day where they all went to watch football and on a Sunday, and it got out of hand quickly. You know, they were throwing him down pretty good, and Sudsy came up to bay. They'd been there a few hours, and the bar had a mirror and it had all the bottles. So, you know, there's a mirror behind all the bottles. Well, Bucky's looking. He's staring into the thing, and Sudsy says, "What, Bucky, what are you doing?" He goes, "This guy's been looking at me for the last 30 minutes, and it was him. He was looking in the mirror, and he thought this guy on the other side of the bar was staring at him." I said, "Come on, man." He goes, "I swear to God." I'm going to kill this guy. Oh, God bless him. He was awesome.
Yeah, they didn't make him like that anymore.
No. You
know? Yeah, no, he was as old school as they got, right?
Yeah. He was great. We can't thank you enough, Joey, for joining us. We could keep you on here for hours, man, but
thank you for having me. I enjoyed seeing you guys again.
Yeah.
Wish you luck with the show.
Thank you. We appreciate it.
If you ever stuck again.
Oh, hey.
I'm usually sitting right here.
Hey, he always says 2.0. We'll get you. When things clear up, hopefully we can get back down around here and we can have you in the studio.
Ooh.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That would be awesome.
Yeah.
You're going to have to bring Elvis, though.
Oh, yeah. Well, he's in school. He knows. He knows we were going to talk to you today, so he's excited. I told him before he left, so.
A big shout out to Elvis.
Yeah, I appreciate it. He loves you. He loves Mr. Joey. That's what he calls him, Mr. Joey. Mr.
Joey.
But thank you so much, man. We really do appreciate it. Let's stay in better touch, too, here, right? Let's stay in better touch.
Sounds good.
It's been too long.
Yep. All right. You guys take care, Ralph.
Yeah, you
always
too.
A pleasure, man.
Yeah, likewise. Great to see you.
All right. You guys take care.
You too.
See you, Joe. That episode was brought to you by Myco Tea. Check out drinkmycotea.com for this living mycelium beverage. I got some Lion's Mane going on here, Nast. What do you got going on?
Well, it's funny you ask. I have a little cordyceps here, and it's my favorite.
Cranking up the energy.
Yeah, I do. I need it.
You do need it. You're always.
Always.
You're always sleeping.
Listen to you.
Lion's Mane for brain function. Need
14 hours a night, this guy sleeps.
A huge thank you to our good friend Joe Mullen. What an amazing dude.
Oh,
amazing hockey career. Amazing story.
Amazing human being. Yeah. Like I said, probably 50 times, but one of the nicest people I ever met in hockey.
Yeah.
Love that guy, man. God, I love that guy.
Yeah. I loved I think back at my short NHL career, and Joey Mullen just sticks out to me, you know, the two pass games, just his good energy around the rink and always smiling and just such a humble guy.
Eh?
Know, having such a career like that and success, you would never, ever know it, speaking to the guy.
You would not. You would never know he played hockey unless you knew who he was, because he would never bring anything up like that. Right. But guy was amazing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Truly amazing guy.
Well, it's great to reconnect with him. Yeah. Wish him the best. And that's a wrap. Episode 57's in the books, Nast.
In the books.
All right. Check us out next week, episode 58. Until then, stay safe.
See you, knuckleheads. Have some fun.